and it's the Insights with all the news the government does not want you to know. Now, here's the host of the Inside Scoop, Congressional Attorney Mark Levine.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the first Inside Scoop of 2008. Happy New Year, everyone. And I welcome also on my show someone who is my most frequent guest in 2007, Mike Lane, the president of Intellifit Strategies. It is his job to get Republicans elected, and it's my job as a former attorney for the Congressional Democrats to try to stop him. But we always try to give a lot of good analysis, and of course, we can't stop talking about the events of just a few days ago, the Iowa caucuses. It is a strange procedure, and probably, frankly, in my view, a wrong one, a very undemocratic procedure. Iowa and New Hampshire always get to go first for organic rather than logical reasons. And the Iowa caucus is a small percentage of Iowa voters, only the most committed activists. Still, the Iowa caucus has had a greater number and percentage of voters than ever before in American history. And then, a month from now, with the states leapfrogging over each other to have Super Tuesday, we will probably have nominees for the Democratic and Republican nomination, and then sit for 8 months until November, when the American people will finally go and elect an electoral college, which will then elect the president. That is, if the Supreme Court doesn't get involved. As you know, Mike, when it's closed, the Supreme Court simply throws the election to the Republicans and throws out the votes. But I want to talk about Iowa caucuses today because it was amazing. It was a surprise to a lot of the pundits. Here you had people who had been running Obama a very clear second in the pack, Huckabee way back in the pack, and they won a victory in Iowa. Mike, what do you attribute that to?
Well, it's not so much the fact that they won that was the surprise as much as the margin of their victory, which was it. I mean, you and I talked about 6 weeks ago, Mark, and you asked me what I thought, and on the Democratic side, I called it right. I said, no matter what the polls say today, I think it's going to be Obama out there in Iowa, and it was Obama there in Iowa. But what shocked everyone was the 9-point margin that he won by. I mean, that's just... that is an earthquake in that particular caucus. On the Republican side, Huckabee was leading. He had the surge going. I thought that he was probably peaking too soon and was going to fall back, and that ultimately it was going to be Governor Romney's money and organization that was going to save the day. Although marginally for him he was going to squeak through, he didn't. Huckabee won, and although he didn't win as big as Obama won, he still won.
Well, I think he got a 14-point margin over Romney, didn't he?
No, it was about a...
It was a double-digit margin. It was huge.
I mean, it was a very large
margin. Here's what strikes me about this craziness in our system, which you and I have both called to change in different ways. But here you have a tiny percentage of the most activist people in a really unrepresentative state. Not that any particular state is representative. Maybe Ohio would come closest in some middle sense. But here you have a small group of activists. And to me, that was what was so interesting, because now these small group of activists have driven the media. A poor Rudolph Giuliani, he was the front runner in the Republican nomination, but he did so bad in Iowa that you don't even hear his name talked about anymore in the media. You have Richardson is way in the back of the pack, almost on his way out. Fred Thompson's election seems about over. You know, Dodd and Biden are already out of the race, and all because of a few 100,000 voters in Iowa.
And is it fair that the state of Iowa and the activists in that state should be able to clear the table like that and set it up for the remaining effort? You and I both agree, no, it should not be like that. We're dealing with the way it is now this year. It may change in 4 years. We may get some sort of nomination electoral reform. I don't know. But right now we have to deal with what we're facing. And what we're facing is that it has essentially on the Democratic side become a can Hillary stop Obama in New Hampshire, and if not, he's got the potential to run the table from here. And the only question on the Republican side at this point is who is going to become the anti-Huckabee. It looks now like the party is coalescing around McCain. That could change. Who would have thought 6 months ago that John McCain would be the person who was looked by regular Republicans as the salvation of the party?
I've always thought, frankly, McCain was the biggest threat, because I've always felt he was the Republican who could draw the most Democratic votes. But before we get too much into the future, let's deal with what happened in Iowa. You and I will have plenty of time to discuss New Hampshire and the other events as they occur. In Iowa, you had in your party, the Republican Party, Huckabee got 80% of his votes from evangelicals. from fundamentalist Christians. 80%, excuse me, I think he got 60% of his votes from fundamentalist Christians, and 80% of them voted for Huckabee. That's the, so 60%, the majority of his votes, substantially, came from evangelical Christians. And what's interesting to me is if you look at Obama, his votes came from young people, they came from energized activists, new voters to the party. It seems to me that if you look at the directions of our most excited members in the Democratic and the Republican Party, the Democrats are about young people, they're about change, they're about new ideas, they're about invigorating and changing America. And then on your side, it's about supporting a guy who believes that evolution doesn't exist, about going back 100 years. It seems to me that the Democrats voted for the future, your party voted for the Stone Age.
All right, here's where we are, Mark. Looking at the results out of Iowa, if I was to be forced to make a bet today, and remember, there's 39 political lifetimes between now and the election, so we got a lot of time left. But
well, not between now and Super Tuesday.
No, but between now and November.
Sure.
If you want to postulate a Obama-Huckabee race, you know, we can talk about those things. But right now, if you force me to make a bet today, I'd say that Obama's looking a lot stronger than anybody thought he would. I mean, his ability to bring out the new voters and the young voters, not necessarily the party activists, because they were all with John Edwards and Hillary Clinton. But to do what he did with the new voters and the young voters is seismic. I mean, it is just,
I'll tell you,
it's changed, unheard of.
It's changing my mind.
It's seismic.
Let me tell you why it's changing my mind. I can tell you that as a Democrat, I'm happy with all the choices. I really am. I would be very happy with President Hillary Clinton. I'd be happy with President Barack Obama. I'd be happy with President John Edwards. I'd be happy with President Richardson. Heck, I would have liked President Dodd and President Biden. I loved my choices. President Kucinich, for me, would be leagues better than the president that we have now.
Well, fortunately, Dennis is going to run for president of Mars instead of president of the United States.
But in any case, the point is that I'm very happy with my choices.
Right.
So the reason, the thing that's going to change me, change my mind, and I'm still an undecided Democratic voter, so hey, you know, campaigns, call me, you know, try to convince me here. But the thing that's going to pull my lever, honestly, is which Democrat I think will best beat the Republicans, because I am very tired of 8 years of George Bush. The entire country is tired of 8 years of George Bush, even your party is very tired of George Bush. That's why they keep talking about change.
The good news,
and if Obama convinces me, as he's starting to, that he can pull independent votes, they can even pull Republican votes, and we'll see in New Hampshire, it's an interesting dynamic with McCain and Obama in many ways fighting for the same independent votes. If Obama convinces me that he can get the middle rather than Hillary, Obama's going to get my vote in the primary.
Well, if the Virginia primary counts for anything by the time it rolls around.
It probably won't.
It probably won't. It may. Probably not on your side. I think Obama will have it wrapped up on that point.
Really?
But
you're declaring victory for Obama already.
Say
he wins New Hampshire and South Carolina. Hillary is still beating him 2-1 in national polls.
If he wins New Hampshire, I think it's time to run the table. I think Hillary's black support crumbles and goes to Obama. I think he takes South Carolina at that point. She's got Michigan because she's the
Michigan,
only one on the ballot in
and
Michigan.
And Florida and Nevada.
Well, not necessarily. You've got those are unique states because
Nevada may go for Richardson if he's not out by then.
Richardson will be no. Richardson, he's mired at 2%. He always was running for vice president. He's still running for vice president.
He's
still saying nice things about
our front lines. Vice president,
and he would make a good pick.
Right.
The one thing, clear thing is Hillary is not going to choose Obama, and Obama is not going to choose Hillary. They hate each other's guts, and they're just not.
Oh,
going to,
I think.
Oh
that,
no,
I don't.
They hate each other's guts. They hate each other's guts.
I don't think so. I saw a lot of harsher stuff among Republicans.
Let's get back to the Republican side. You brought up the Huckabee phenomenon and what's going on there. Let me say this. I got an email just a couple days ago from the People for the American Way, you know, one of those fringe interest groups that, you know, likes to support Democratic candidates.
They're hardly a fringe
interest
group.
And what they said, that's right, they're not a fringe interest group. What they said was, they said, okay, you know, the Republicans in Iowa voted for Mike Huckabee, quote, the right kind of Christian.
Right.
Now, if they, by putting it in parentheses, what they really meant was the wrong kind of Christian. And if the Democratic Party or the People for the American Way or anybody is going to start running against Christianity, you're going to lose the race. That's the wrong way to run the race. That's what the People for the American Way are doing. And if you start picking up on what they're doing, Mark, you're going to lose it. I guarantee
you. They're not running against Christianity.
The People for the American Way are running against Christianity.
No.
Yes, they are.
Running,
then why do they say he was the right kind of Christian, meaning wrong kind of Christian? What do they mean by that?
They're running against theocracy, not Christianity. They're
Mike Huckabee
against,
is hardly a theocrat.
He's certainly a theocrat.
He's
he
not.
Wants to make his version of Christianity the law of the land.
I don't think so.
He does not believe in the separation of church and state. He doesn't even believe in evolution. He takes us back to the 1920s. I thought in the Scopes monkey trial we had gotten over that. He is against science. He is against civil liberties for all Americans. Look, right. I understand he's the face of your party.
No, he's not.
I myself, frankly, think that if Mike Huckabee wins your nomination, we're going to have a very strong state, multi-state victory.
Okay.
So it's okay with me, but I can tell you this. And yeah, I'm sure you agree, he is scaring so many people, not just in my party, but in your party as well, that he is single-handedly responsible for the McCain surge over Romney in New Hampshire.
No, McCain is responsible for the McCain surge. He won New Hampshire 8 years ago. He's had the New Hampshire voters have had a love affair with John McCain.
He was down at 13% just 2 weeks ago.
Right,
He spent
2 weeks up there doing nothing but campaigning in it. Look,
it's not his campaign.
Look,
they're scared of Huckabee and they're scared of Romney in your party.
First of all, I don't think Huckabee is going to be the nominee, but if he is, the last time you guys were salivating to run against a particular Democrat the way you're salivating to run against Mike Huckabee was George Bush. To run against a Republican was him. And the time before that you were absolutely salivating to run against somebody was Ronald Reagan.
But I'll tell you
so
this.
Keep salivating.
Well,
you know,
no,
we like this.
It is scary, and I have friends of mine who are Democrats who are supporting John McCain, not because they want to see McCain as president, but because they're so scared of the theocracy that Mike Huckabee would bring. And I tell them, look, don't do that, because I think McCain is a real threat. Let me ask you this.
Mike Huckabee is a superb politician who has gotten where he is by running an incredibly good campaign. Don't think that...
You know why Mike Huckabee might lose in your party? It's not because of his ideas on theocracy or Christianity.
No.
The things that get him in trouble in your party is he actually has a heart. He actually cares about the poor, which your party hates.
Well,
he actually talks about health care. Your party loves sick people, does not want to see them get any help. He talks about immigrants. He's actually to the left of your party on a lot of issues that your party cares about, being harsh on immigrants.
No, no, no. What he's not is he's not as historically conservative as many in the Republican Party. It remains to be seen whether a non-pure conservative can get the nomination. Mike Huckabee is not a pure conservative. He has had campaign conversion on a number of issues.
They all have.
Well, of course, on both sides, they all have campaign conversion on a number of issues.
No one in your party is taking the mantle of George Bush. No one in your party is arguing for 4 more years.
I think John McCain is.
John McCain, as you know, has been battling with this administration all throughout the administration. Who has the Bush legacy?
Whose idea was the surge that now has proved that it worked? That was John McCain who went to the president and said, "You've got to do this surge, Mr. President."
That's a different issue, which we'll get to.
John McCain is the one who has
here's the point.
Taken the mantle of George Bush, and he's the one who's
party. Has agreed that this is an election about change.
Right.
Even your party. I mean, after Reagan, they were saying 4 more years. No one, absolutely no one in your party is saying 4 more years of Republican rule. George Bush wasn't mentioned once in the Republican debate, and there's a reason he was a failed president.
Of course we're saying 4 more years of Republican rule. We're saying 8, 16, 24, 32,
No one's saying it.
Sure.
They want them to
not
forget
of,
and say, oh, we're not
no,
George Bush.
No.
We're going to do different things.
George Bush is not the Republican Party.
Away from George Bush.
But they're not running away from the Republican Party, and George Bush will not be on the ballot, and it'll be a whole new matrix of ideas and issues, and it's going to, you know.
Voters are not going to let your next Republican president ruin the country the way George Bush has.
If you want to run against George Bush in November, I wish you well. We'll win.
Folks, if you want to comment on tonight's show, go to the website, radioinsightsgroup.com. Tell us your thoughts, and we'll read them on air. Right back.
Bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish.
If you give someone a fish.
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
Give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last call.
No, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweetened stir.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
We're back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We are discussing the Iowa caucuses with my guest, Mike Lane. He is the president of Telefin Strategies. It's his job to get Republicans elected and my job as a former congressional attorney for the Democrats to stop them. But we agree on many of the politics here, even if we disagree on the party's positions. I want to play a couple segments from the recent debate in New Hampshire. It's very interesting. Here you had a Republican debate and a Democratic debate. You even had the candidates on stage at the same time. Mm-hmm. This compressed schedule has caused a lot of focus on it. This is an exchange between Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney on high oil prices that I would like to play for you and get your comment on.
I think it is possible to get energy independent and do it within a decade. We're the same country that built an atomic. I believe we can, if we want to. If we untax the possibilities of the innovations and technologies, if we also look at the fact that if put an incentive out there that's just truly something dramatic, $1 billion bonus for the first person who can produce a car that can get 100 miles per gallon. In addition to that, look at the alternative forms of energy that we can use.
And everybody's talked about profits tax. There'd be no windfall profits tax on that.
There wouldn't be. No, and I don't believe there should be, Fred, because I think we ought to untax innovation, untax income. Anytime you penalize productivity, it's counterintuitive to an economy. And one of the reasons that we're dependent is because we have allowed the oil companies to dictate not just prices, but policy. And it's time to say that we're not going to allow dictators, whether it's the Middle East or from Venezuela, to continue to, in essence, enslave the American people, which is exactly what we've done. Senator McCain is right. We have an issue now where we're paying for both sides of the war on terror. We pay for it with our tax dollars to fund the military, but every time we swipe our credit card in the gas pump, we might as well be sending a check over to the madrasas that are training the terrorists that eventually are going to come back to us. And that's why it's got to be an urgent matter of utmost priority.
Right, we are just about out of time, but Governor Romney, you're going to have the final word.
We're going to have to deal with this in an honest way with the American people, and that is this is not something that's going to get solved in 10 years. We can't become energy independent in 10 years, but we can get ourselves on a track to do that with all the ways that Senator McCain and Mayor Giuliani and Fred Thompson have described. We can get there. It's going to require a far more substantial investment by our nation in energy technology. Right now we spend about $4 billion a year on new sources of energy and energy efficiency. We're going to have to increase that dramatically. And American corporations, last year they spent more money defending tort lawsuits than they spent on research and development. We're upside down. The future of a great nation like ours depends on leading the world in technology and innovation, in energy in particular. This has to be our highest domestic economic priority. Get ourselves on a track to become energy secure and energy dependent, independent. We can do that. It's within our grasp, but it's going to take reality rather than just the political rhetoric we've seen over the last 25 years.
Holy smoke. I agree with Mike Huckabee. My God, I mean, he's crazy on evolution, and he's certainly for violating civil liberties, but when he says that oil companies have been dictating our prices and profits for too long, I don't know about $1 billion bonus, but certainly that we need to put more money, government money, into getting us so that the same people who are attacking America don't get our money from oil,
This is exactly what the Democrats have been saying for decades. The Republican energy bill was all about helping, you know, give more money to Arab countries, give more money to American oil companies, and now your party, without saying so, is going in the absolute opposite direction for everything Bush and your party has stood for over a decade. Good
you know,
for them.
You know, I couldn't disagree with more of what you just said. Let's look at where we are now. Clearly, we are energy dependent on sources we should not be, and everybody wants to get off that.
We have been for 50
years. Or more. And the question is how to get off it. And although Governor Huckabee had a very interesting proposal there, and I agree with you, I don't think a billion-dollar bonus for the first 100-mile-a-gallon car or whatever it is.
But the idea of a bonus is the good
is,
one,
is the answer.
I like the idea.
But what he was talking about was a private sector solution. He wasn't talking about the government inventing this car. He wasn't talking about
in the private
sector. That was Governor Romney who was talking about the government investment. It was Governor Huckabee who was saying, "Let's you know, let's reduce taxes. Let's you know, give tax credits. Let's make them
you, didn't
you know."
Mention taxes in that segment.
He wants a private sector solution.
He wants a billion dollar bonus. That's a government aid to private industry. It's a kick in the pants to tell them to do the right thing.
What Governor Romney was talking about was government investment here, government investment there. You know, we are going to have some government investment. And I agree with the governor of Massachusetts, Romney. We're not talking about a 10-year process to energy independence. Anybody who promises 10 years to energy independence is being a trifle overly optimistic. What we're talking here is probably a 25-year march to energy independence, and it's going to include new sources of energy, and that's going to have to include nuclear. And I know you guys are just totally anti-nuclear every time we turn around, but it's going to have to be nuclear. It's cheap, it's clean, and it's safe. And why you won't let us bring nuclear on instead of coal burning is beyond me. Beyond that, we are going to do some wind. We are going to do some solar. We are going to do some biomass, all that stuff. We ought to get rid of this ridiculous Iowa thing of the ethanol. I mean, that's just the worst idea that, you know, we've all ever heard, and we know that. John McCain's the only one who was honest, who went out there to Iowa and said, okay, you know what? I am going to compete in Iowa, and no, I'm not going to take the ethanol pledge because it's silly.
Mike, let me back up because you said lots of things there. First of all, in terms of alternative fuel, whether it be solar or wind, a great bill came. It came before the Senate. It had every single Democrat in support. It even had about 8 Republicans in support. They didn't get 60 because your party filibustered.
Because,
and why did they filibuster?
Because you're,
they didn't want any money to go to alternative energy
like wind or solar.
That was the sticking point, and the Democrats had to take out the requirement that the money go to alternative fuels. They had to take it out because your party filibustered it.
That's not the entire reason.
That was the sticking point.
Your party is so punitive against oil companies. The oil companies have been delivering us our energy.
Stop corporate welfare.
And what you're trying to do, you're so punitive against. That's why the Republicans were against it.
I realize because you don't give any welfare to a person in America who's dying, a child who's dying of leukemia. The child has to die. But why does ExxonMobil need my tax dollars? The richest corporations on earth, and your party wants to funnel money to them. I know they give a lot of money to your party.
Do you know?
But other than that, what good does it do to funnel money into an outdated technology?
They give a lot of money to your party as well.
Compared to your party.
Where is the investment going to come from these new technologies? It's going to come from the people with the cash in the energy business. It's going to come from the oil companies because they know they have a finite resource right now. And they can't ride that elevator down to the basement.
Cut off the corporate welfare entirely.
No.
Instead, subsidies for wind and solar.
Why? You know, we're talking about R&D in this stuff, and you want to eliminate the R&D tax credit. Why do you want to do that?
R&D for oil. I have no problem with R&D for wind or solar or renewable resources.
And in the 25-year process, as we're moving away from oil, it is a 25-year process.
John F. Kennedy said 10 years to go to the moon. No one believed him at the time, and he was right. We did it in 10 years. If you put that kind of sustained effort, and this, frankly, is more important than going to the moon. Look, Jimmy Carter did many things wrong, but the one thing he did right was talk about 40 years ago, almost now, 30-plus years ago, that we should go and be independent of foreign oil. It can be done in 10 years, and it's something
that should be done. The Democratic Congress wouldn't go along with them, would they?
What's striking to me is that your party is actually starting to see the light and follow the lead of people like Obama and Hillary Clinton.
We have always...
And I'm proud of your party for that.
Well, thank you.
If not you.
Thank you. We have always been in favor of alternative sources of energy, in favor of... I mean, where did the strategic reserve come from so we wouldn't be so dependent on that?
It's more oil. Your party's all about oil.
That's all your party cares about because they give lots of money to the Republican Party.
We have been looking for ways out of the oil trap for 25 years, for 35 years. We haven't found it yet. We're not going to find it in the next 3 to 5 to 7 years, so don't think we are. There's a lot of things that have to happen. It has to be a mix of things, and the Democratic Party is all about penalizing and punitive measures against oil companies and no nuclear
only
power.
Only a Republican.
And no nuclear
only
power.
Only a Republican argue that if you don't give the richest corporations on Earth, in history on Earth, if you don't give them hundreds of millions of dollars of taxpayer-earned dollars, hardworking people's money, that's somehow punitive. Only Republicans.
Why do you want to take away their R&D tax credit only because they're oil companies? You don't want to take away R&D tax credits from other companies. You just want to take them away from oil companies. Why are you being punitive against them?
Oil companies they make want us to invest in the future rather than the past, they should get credit.
And instead what are we going to do in the meantime,
Mark? Instead of the horseshoe... investment credit to blacksmiths, maybe we should get investment credit to people who make solar energy, who make wind power. Brazil, as you know, Mike, in four years, went from an entirely oil-based motor vehicle economy to 40% of their cars now run on sugarcane. And Brazil isn't the United States. I give lots of credit to Brazil. We can do it, and we can do better, and it's only your part that's preventing us from moving toward the future.
Well, for years and years, you had both the White House and the Congress, and you were unable to do anything. So it's
years
not the Republican
years.
Party.
Yeah. Well, we had, 4 years under Carter and 2 years under Clinton, and what happens? Your party filibusters all those changes because you get money from oil companies.
When did the first energy crisis hit? It was back in the 70s during the heyday of Jimmy Carter and the Democratic Congress, and what did you guys accomplish? You accomplished nothing.
That's because your party keeps filibustering
us.
Change. I'll give you an example. We started to raise CAFE standards. We started to raise fuel standards for cars.
Okay.
We started to raise it. We started to get smaller cars in the 70s. Ronald Reagan came in and he went further backward than anywhere Jimmy Carter had gone forward.
You know what?
And that's your party's fault.
If you weren't against the little guy, if instead of mandating...
The little guy?
Yeah, the little guy.
If you weren't
against the little guy, what you're doing when you impose these huge jumps in CAFE standards is you're making American cars uncompetitive and you're putting Americans out of work. Uncompetitive. And
European
you're putting Americans
cars,
out of work.
Japanese cars,
now,
they have higher CAFE standards. Why can't we compete with them,
right? Here's what you
We're
do
not
on,
uncompetitive.
Here's what you do on CAFE. You do it incrementally. You do it a little bit here. You do it every year. You have a little bit more to go. And you make it flexible.
And maybe one day we'll be as close to the Europeans as the Japanese.
When you start saying, we need an immediate 20% increase in CAFE and another 20% 5 years from now, you're putting people out of work.
I'll tell you.
And that's not what
that's
the,
how
you know,
the Europeans did it.
You don't
that's
want to put
America. Japanese did it. And there's a reason why Americans have more European and Japanese cars. Their cars run better, and it's because in many ways they're more.
And I'll trade our economy and our employment for the European model any day of the week.
We want to hear from you. Go to your computer. Go to www.radioinsidescoop.com. We will read your comments on it. Right back with more of the Iowa Caucus.
Some people in Fairfax County don't know what public access means.
Some think it's just another channel on the dial.
But it's much more than that.
It's the voice of the people.
People like you.
Your neighbors, your friends.
Or your family.
People who want to share ideas,
opinions,
cultures,
lifestyles,
art,
sports,
music,
events, entertainment,
history,
science,
beliefs.
People who want to learn about television,
producing,
directing,
cameras,
audio,
lighting,
editing, or radio, talk, music.
Whatever you think people should hear.
Public access is the place where everyone has a voice.
And it's the place where that voice gets heard.
A place where you can create your own form of personal expression.
So what do you want to say?
Whatever it is.
You can say it here.
Because we're public access.
For the people.
By the people.
It is about balancing our choices between the gray of the concrete jungle and the stunning beauty of the real one. Between a stoic facade of granite and the fury of the canyon. It's why there's EarthShare, the simple way to find balance. EarthShare is the workplace giving program bringing the leading environmental groups under one umbrella. Support EarthShare, support them all. EarthShare, please ask your employer about workplace giving. To learn more, visit our website.
Thousands of kids in this country have everything it takes to go to college. Except the money. The United Negro College Fund. A mind is a...
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. One of the things I like about live television, Mike, is you never know where it's going to go, where our debate's going to go. I was talking about differences between Romney and Huckabee, and you and I went to cafe standards, and that's fine. That's part of what this show is about. And folks, if you want to write in, let us know your opinions, just go to the website, radioinsidescoop.com. I want to switch gears entirely.
All right.
And talk about an exchange between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama that I thought was very interesting, because a lot of Democrats like Hillary Clinton's policies. No one disputes that she's extremely intelligent, and no one disputes that she's got a good, firm grasp on the policies. Her problem has been in what pundits call likability. And they addressed that directly with Hillary Clinton at the New Hampshire debate. I'd like to play for you her response. Actually, oops, we got a... part of the problem with live TV is that... we have to wait a bit on that. We will get to that, I promise. We will get to her live response. Here it is.
To ask you this, the University of New Hampshire Survey Center has been consistently trying to probe the minds of New Hampshire voters and get a sense of what they think about all of you. I'd be happy to report that the experience versus change debate seems to be sinking in. And what I'd like to get is to this. New Hampshire voters seem to believe that of those of you on this stage, you are the most experienced and the most electable in terms of change. They see Senators Obama and Edwards as the agents of change in New Hampshire mindset. My question to you is simply this. What can you say to the voters of New Hampshire on this stage tonight who see your resume and like it, but are hesitating on the likability issue, where they seem to like Barack Obama more?
Well, that hurts my feelings.
I'm sorry, Senator. I'm sorry.
But I'll try to go on. He's very likable. I agree with that. I don't think I'm that bad.
You're likable enough.
Thank
Hillary,
you so much. I appreciate that. You know, I think this is one of the most serious decisions that the voters of New Hampshire have ever had to make. And I really believe that the most important question is who is ready to be president on day one. You know, the problems waiting, some of which we have talked about already, are huge, and the stakes could not be higher. And, you know, in 2000, we unfortunately ended up with a president who people said they wanted to have a beer with, who said he wanted to be a uniter, not a divider, who said that he had his intuition and he was going to, you know, really come into the White House and transform the country. And, you know, at least I think there are the majority of Americans who think that was not the right choice. So I am offering 35...
Let me stop that there. I thought that was heroic. I thought she hit the ball out of the park. She both responded in a humorous way to show that... And then I think she made a very profound argument, which is that likeability should not be what decides a president of the United States. People thought that, hey, it's more fun to have a drink with George Bush. I mean, after all, he has a criminal past, and he's done drugs, and rather than good old Boy Scout Al Gore, who happened to know what was best for the country, but was not as much of a party animal as George Bush. And we got 8 years of George Bush. Shouldn't voters vote for the person who is most experienced, who knows what's best, who's smartest, rather than the most likable person?
Well, voters always take likability into account. Whether that's good or bad, they do. If Hillary Clinton had run the last year of the campaign the way she ran the answer to that particular question, a tremendously endearing, likable moment for her, this wouldn't be a contest. The inevitability of Mrs. Clinton's nomination would still be there. I mean, who's Obama? He's just the anti-Clinton is really all he is at this point. Nobody knows a lot about him as Hillary Clinton and as President Clinton on the campaign trail are out there saying, we don't really know this guy. Who is he? You know, he abstains from votes. He's unqualified to be president, according to the previous president. So if Hillary had done that the entire last year...
They're not saying he's unqualified.
No, Bill Clinton said he was unqualified.
They're saying Hillary Clinton is more qualified.
Bill Clinton said he was unqualified. Now, I'm going to take Bill Clinton at his word that Obama is unqualified.
I think he'll back off that
quickly. He may.
Considering that George Bush was a two-term governor of the weakest gubernatorial state in the nation, we've seen... don't you think... But it seems to me very interesting because Obama is representing change. It is representing for young people who are tired of the Clintons and the Bushes who've been running this country for the last 16 years.
Obama talks about change. He's never really articulated what change is. I mean, it reminds me of... No, he hasn't.
Talked about in Iraq. He's talked about in the economy.
It reminds me of President Clinton's campaign the first time back when he was Governor Clinton. And he was running against the first President Bush. And he was talking about change all the time, and it was a tremendously effective argument. I mean, he was in there talking about, I don't know how Mrs. Clinton let change get away from her because it worked so well for her husband when he was running. But Obama has co-opted the change argument, even though he doesn't articulate what he means by change.
I'll tell you what, many of the
tremendously effective at this point. We'll see what it's like 6 months from now.
Many of your Republican nominees gave a very interesting view on Obama and change. We've heard your view on Obama. Let's hear what your Republican nominee
I think he's going to be your nominee. I really do.
He may. Let's hear what your party's nominees had to say.
The problem Barack Obama would have is, first of all, he's never run a city, never run a state, never run a business. I don't think at a time when America is at war with the major problems that we face, we're going to want someone to get on the job experience as the chief executive, never having had that kind of experience. I do think he's embraced change. But change is a concept. Is it change for good or change for bad? Changing and having higher taxes, in my view, would be very bad for our economy. Changing and moving towards socialized medicine would be very bad for our health care system. Changing by a precipitous withdrawal from Iraq without considering the consequences, he voted for giving the enemy a timetable of our retreat in Iraq, unheard of in a time of war. So I would say that virtually the same issues that exist between me and, let's say, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, John Edwards, they are really issues between Republicans and Democrats. And in the case of Senator Obama, he really doesn't have the experience, either from the national security point of view or even from just the executive point of view.
Governor Huckabee?
Well, I think there would be substantial differences on the Second Amendment, on the sanctity of life, on the role of government, on the idea of local versus federal government. I'm still a Tenth Amendment guy. I believe that most of these decisions ought to be left to the states. I think there would also be fundamental differences on taxes, whether they ought to go up or down. I think there would be differences on national defense. I think we ought to have the strongest possible military that nobody else on earth wants to ever even think about engaging in battle. There would be a number of issues that would be fundamentally different. Probably on same-sex marriage, there would be a difference of opinion between Senator Obama and me. I mean, I could go through a whole litany of things. It would be dramatically different. I think, in fact, it would be fair to say that any one of us would have a very different litany of issues. But in fairness, since I still have just a little bit of yellow light left, I think we also ought to recognize that what Senator Obama has done is to touch at the core of something Americans want. They are so tired of everything being horizontal, left, right, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican. They're looking for vertical leadership that leads up, not down. He has excited a lot of voters in this country. Let's pay respect for that. He's a likable person who has excited people about wanting to vote who have not voted in the past. And we'd better be careful as a party, because if we don't give people something to be for and only something to be against, we're going to lose that next election, and there are some fundamental issues that we lose with it.
Congressman Paul.
You know, it's interesting that you ask this question because we have a lot of similarities, matter of fact, Barack Obama and myself, because our campaign is made up of the young people. And frequently we will have young people joining us that came from the Barack Obama's campaign, and we're very pleased. But Barack spoke out against the war before it started, and he respects civil liberties, and I respect him for that. But the question is why would it be? I assume it's because of the similarity in the age of us two candidates that the young people are attracted to us.
Let's stop it here. Ron Paul does go on to criticize Obama on issues of government spending and things. But let me just get your comment on
Look, what they're trying to do is in this particular segment is they're paying their respects to the guy who they think is going to be the nominee. They're not trying to trash him right now. They're trying to say, oh, he's going to be a very worthwhile opponent.
They'll save the trashing for September and October.
Well, I don't think it's going to be that long. I think, you know, probably around May is when you'll start seeing it come in. But they're, you know, it's not time to roll out the heavy guns. Right now the Clintons are rolling out the heavy guns against Obama. So let the Clintons do it, and then they'll come in later.
Is what they say accurate, though, that he has inspired young people, he's inspired new voters, he's trying to move this country beyond partisanship in a way that, frankly, many Democrats and Republicans are not doing?
I'll grant you the first part. He has inspired new voters, he has inspired young voters, he's brought people in who have not been part of the process before. And that's the way he's doing it. Now, whether or not, you know, he's going to be the one leader of one country and bring everybody together, I sincerely doubt. He's not abandoning partisanship. This guy is about as partisan a Democrat as you'll ever want to see. There are no Republicans who are going to support Obama. I mean, it's just not going to happen. The guy is further left than John Kerry, and John Kerry was a leftist lefty.
First of all we need is Democrats and independents. And what's interesting is independents but you're not going to get Obama better than Hillary Clinton.
Right now, the polling in both New Hampshire and Iowa is such that the independents that would lean Democrat, be inclined to vote in the Democratic selection process.
Not just those, even the ones in the middle. Because I saw a woman on the air the other day. It's just one woman. That's deciding between Obama and McCain.
Right. Let's take the New Hampshire primary. Right now, you know, as you know, those are open primaries where independents can vote in either one. Obama does have an edge there. The independents, non-registered in either party, are leaning to voting in the Democratic Party by a Democratic primary by a substantial margin of 2-1.
Right. And
the vast majority of them are probably going to vote for Obama, not for Hillary.
But by the way, it's interesting that in Iowa, this is a state that has, you know, red one year and blue the next. It's very much one of the most purple states in America, frankly, as is New Hampshire. It's one thing they have in common. They're swing states. Mm-hmm. And yet 2-1. Voters were in the Democratic primary rather than the Republican primary, even though you had a very open primary. People like Obama.
I am going to stipulate to the fact that right now, in January of 08, fully 11 months or 10 months before the election is going to be held, that, you know, if you were to start putting together the board, it's an easier road to hoe for Obama than it will be for whoever the Republican nominee is. That's what campaigns are all about. It's up to us to make the case once we have a nominee, and up to you to make the case once you have a nominee as to how it's going to... If the election were held today, I would not be betting large amounts of money on the Republican Party. But we have 10 months to go before that happens. A lot can happen in 10 months.
What did you think about Huckabee's comment that your party needs to be a party for something and not just a party against something?
Well, I think we're a party for a lot of things. I think what he's talking about is the young kids that are attracted to...
Kids you call 18 to 30.
Well, yeah, the demographic kids is what I'm talking about. The ones not the 5-year-olds, but we have to articulate a positive agenda that will appeal to the 18 to 30-year-olds. And right now, there is no one other than Ron Paul who's talking about that positive agenda that's going to on our side.
And
that's going to appeal to the 18.
But one of the reasons Ron Paul is appealing to young people is precisely because of his opposition to the war in Iraq.
I don't think so. I think what is appealing to him is his libertarian streak. There are a certain number of people who say, just leave me alone and get off my back. And that's 180 degrees from Obama's message, which is the government is going to do everything for you.
Well, Obama's message is that we shouldn't have children in America.
Obama's message is the government is going to solve every problem, real or imagined. That's what it's about.
We have to take another break. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to show what the Democrats think about the Republican candidates, and we're going to read your comments on the blog at RadioInsideScoop.com. There's still time to post them. We'll be right back after this.
This is Mommy's bed. Me and Jenny were jumping on it. Mommy's gun fell on the floor. I was a cowboy. Bang, 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 bang. I said, Jenny, wake up, wake up. It's just pretend. But she wouldn't wake up.
If you give me a fish...
If you give someone a fish...
You feed them for a day.
Teach someone to fish.
You feed them for a lifetime.
give me a fish, and you'll feed me for a day. Teach me to fish, and you'll feed me for a lifetime.
Through Volunteers of America, you can help change lives in your community.
Oh, hey, mister. Studied algebra in school and got a better job than I could. You take the last cup.
Oh, no, mister. Stuck in an entry-level job because you only learned basic math. I don't have a boss riding my butt like you do, so you take it so you can get back to your desk.
You know, I probably should, but maybe Miss AP Calculus with the $200 haircut in the big office upstairs would like a cup.
Oh, no, mister. What was your name again? Never mind, it doesn't matter. I'm too busy doing important things to care. I just came down for some sweet nectar.
You know, if my limited math abilities weren't keeping me from getting a better job, I'd quit this afternoon.
I don't blame you. But thank goodness you're stuck here because we really need someone to make the coffee.
We are back to the Inside Scoop. Call in live and let your voice be heard. Here again, your host, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We do appreciate all the comments on the blog. An answer to Robert about the phones being down. They are down today. Normally, this is a live call-in show. You can blame Verizon. John Edwards often talks about big corporations failing America. In this case, Verizon has failed us, but hopefully it will be up for next week.
I don't know anybody who likes Verizon other than stockholders. They love it.
In any case, if you want to comment on today's show, there's still time to do so. Go to the web at radioinsidescoop.com. We'll be reading your comments in just a moment, and Robert has some comments on the blog. Mm-hmm. He will get his word in. Before we get there, though, I always find it interesting when the Republicans talk about the Democrats talk about the Republicans. We heard the Republicans talk about Obama. Mm-hmm. Here now is some of the Democrats talking about the Republicans.
Well, you know, we've had, I don't exactly know how many, 13, 14, and I've lost count. And, you know, I feel like they've been good exchanges among us. You know, there have been one or two moments that I would have taken back. But what's really most important about these debates is that the Democratic Party stands in such contrast to the Republicans. You know, the Republicans have a totally different approach to what we need to be doing. They're not talking about the mortgage crisis and trying to solve it. They're not talking about what I fear to be a slide into recession. They're not talking about global warming. They're not talking about science and innovation. They're not talking about what really is going to face the next president. So I think that we've done in our debates a much better job in actually getting out the issues that are going to be on the desk in the Oval Office when the president walks in. And beyond that, I will leave it to the pundits to decide what I might or might not have said at any one of the debates.
I will let you off on specificity of take backs. Since we're running out of time, Governor Richardson?
Well, I made a lot of them.
They do go on, and Obama actually says one of the things I agree with Hillary is that we're being specific. And so let's talk about the things: mortgage crisis, recession, global warming, science and innovation. Hillary listed off four things that the Democrats are talking about. This country's heading toward recession. That's not a word you hear at all from the Republican candidates.
Well, we're not headed towards recession. In fact, the economy is still very, very strong.
If you make over $100 million a year,
blip.
I'm sure you're doing fine.
No. I mean, any economy is uneven. Not everybody, you know, does well in every economy. But right now,
Clinton's economy.
No, 98% of all people are doing fine. Where is it written the government levels the playing field? The government doesn't level.
98% of all people are doing fine.
98%.
That would surprise a lot of our listeners.
There's no reason why the government levels the playing field on all these things. People have individual responsibilities and individual abilities and individual capabilities, and they should go forward and take advantage of the opportunities that are out there in the strong economy that we have. Now, the government is not responsible for finding each and every one person who, for some reason, has not taken advantage of the strong economy we have and giving them something. That's not the way government should work.
All I can say is that's a typical Republican response. Don't deal with recession. Don't deal with mortgage.
There is no recession.
Blame the poor. That's the Republican response. If you're not making
$100 million,
it's your fault, folks. The Republican answer.
The last recession we had was the Bill Clinton recession when the bubble burst on the tech exuberance, as Alan Greenspan
Under
called
Bill
it.
Clinton, the poor,
right now,
the rich got richer, and so did the poor in the middle class.
We have absolutely no. We have a great economy. There's no recession. I don't see any reason to be worried about the future of the economy right now. Interest rates are coming down to accommodate the mortgage situation. All right.
You can live with your rose-colored glasses.
You probably want
Americans, we know that this economy is not a solid.
You probably want to bail out all these people who knowingly took out these mortgages that they weren't going to be able to pay.
I know. You want these corporations to make billions of dollars off poor people by giving them losing it, Mark.
Let's talk about a huge corporation, okay? Countrywide Mortgage. How much? They're losing billions. Right. They're not making billions.
They're losing billions. The Bush plan is to help because the corporation rather than the homeowner. More money to the rich. I know that's your party's answer for everything.
No.
I want to get to the blog.
My answer is not. Go ahead.
I want to get to the blog.
Because
we have a lot of people who commented.
The Robert government is not going to solve every problem.
But the government can be helpful to people. Equal opportunity is something.
Equal opportunity is fine. Equal outcome is not.
I know. And all you want is government welfare to the super rich.
I don't want corporate welfare. No corporate welfare. No government welfare.
Oh, well, then you just have to be against the Republican energy bill. And
I have
the big tax benefits to those that make hundreds of millions of years in the
research and development tax credits are not. Oh, talk about hedge. Let's talk about John Edwards. Who makes money in hedge funds?
John Edwards,
hedge lawyer extraordinaire.
John Edwards believes that rich people should pay taxes too. I'm sorry,
John Edwards is a whore for the hedge funds.
That's terrible.
He doesn't. Yes, he is.
He supports the Democratic plan to make hedge fund owners pay the same rate that everyone else pays.
How much money did he make just in 2006 as a mouthpiece for the hedge funds?
Making money. He doesn't.
How much did he make?
It doesn't matter. He supports the right causes.
Let's go to the blog.
As did Roosevelt and Kennedy, also rich people who supported the right causes. Now, to the blog. We have Robert, who writes him.
Let me work for a hedge fund for just a half a week.
Yeah, exactly. That's the problem. Iowa coming to its finish. Rudy experiences the caving of an avalanche. Thompson reaches for the emergency stop button. Romney outdoes Flipper the dolphin. McCain surges with the mainstream media in fear of Huckabee's vision of a theocracy, while Ron Paul is not even invited to the Republican Party's party. I think Robert hit it right on the nose. You disagree with any of that?
Well, yeah. I mean, don't count Rudy out, okay? I mean, we've still got Florida, New York, and California coming up. Rudy's going to win all three of them. It's going to make him a very substantial player. Is it going to win the whole thing for him? It remains to be seen, but don't count Rudy out.
He's not going to New Hampshire, is he?
No, Rudy's not going to win New Hampshire.
He's not even second or third.
Florida, he'll probably come in fifth.
Right.
But he's going to win Florida, New Hampshire, Florida, New York, and California. And those are fairly substantial, delegations.
So why is it that if Hillary doesn't get a first in New Hampshire, she's out of
And he'll win New Jersey.
But Giuliani can lose Iowa and New Hampshire and still be in it. That doesn't make sense.
I don't think Rudy's going to get it ultimately. But the expectations, Rudy played that game brilliantly and said, I'm not a player in the first two states. My firewall is Florida.
That won't work.
That's the way. Well, it probably won't. There's no model for it working. Nobody's ever done it before. But in the Democratic side, when you say, okay, I'm going to contest the first two states and you get blown away in them,
she wasn't blown away.
She was blown away in Iowa. She came in third place.
She got 30% of the vote.
She was inevitable. She came in third place, and now she's going to come in second place in New Hampshire.
I think all three
by
of
a substantial margin.
Did respectively. I think Obama, Edwards, and Clinton have something.
Obama wins New Hampshire. It's run the table from there.
Let me read more of what Robert has to say.
All right.
He found the Republicans focusing on more war, on their God's superiority over others, on letting the free market decide whether or not you get medical care or not, and on things like torture. Except for Ron Paul, none of them were invoking the Constitution. On the Democrats, he points out that Clinton's baggage is getting heavy as Hillary toils to carry her own luggage. Might be time to lighten the load, maybe, while Obama somehow projects experience from his posturing. The heart of what he has to say is that we're evolving into a society that doesn't provide for only the haves. This is what's resonating, he thinks, with the voters, changing the economics to include all Americans, changing the direction of the last 8 years of foreign policy, draining the swamp, not hating government, but making government we have responsible, accountable, effective to either remove it or change it. Seems very persuasive to me.
Well, he's hitting on the things that are resonating with the voters that are going to Obama. But remember, Obama only got 38% of the Democratic vote in the state of Iowa. So this is by no means, you know, a landslide.
We're not going anywhere now. Or Clinton,
no, no.
It's all the same thing.
No,
they're
no,
all voting for the same thing.
There are slight differences. But right now,
the policy differences between them, most Americans could not name even in Iowa today.
Well, of course, Obama and Hillary would disagree with that.
Of course they would, because they're trying to distinguish themselves.
Right.
But they agree on 90%. And with Edwards, too. And Richardson. If you look at Richardson, Edwards, Obama, and Hillary, 80 to 90%, they agree on.
For the most part,
but
yes.
But Republicans,
they'll disagree on some differences between
Republicans and the Democrats.
You want to throw Ron Paul in the mix?
No,
yes.
No,
you
no,
take
you,
Ron
you,
Paul
you
out
Ron
of the
Ron
mix, then it's not.
Sure there is. McCain and Huckabee? And Romney? You don't see major differences?
McCain and Romney are very close on most of the issues. The only question is, you know, when did Romney come to those positions as opposed to McCain, who has held those issues?
They're not the same on immigration. They're not the same on campaign finance. They're not the same on torture.
Well,
they're not the same on the war.
They are the same on the war. They're exactly the same on the war. Governor Romney has complimented Senator McCain many times on being the father of the surge.
They're not the same on the other three.
Well, campaign finance is over. That was not John McCain's finest hour. In fact, it was one of his worst.
He still considers it his finest hour.
McCain has come full circle on the immigration issue. He no longer pushes the amnesty bill that he used to push, and now he understands that you need to have a securing of the borders first before
he just says
things.
He just says, I'm not for amnesty.
No, no.
But he says you need a securing of the borders. You're lying when you say I was for amnesty. I found this very interesting because Republicans have been calling this the amnesty bill all along, and
right.
McCain saying, well, it's not amnesty. These people have to pay a fine. They have to pay a penalty. And now even Romney had to say, okay, well, it's not really amnesty, but the penalty's not high enough.
You know, it's all semantics at that point. You want to paint somebody into a corner. This is all a campaign. People are going to say things in a campaign that, you know, perhaps don't hold up to scrutiny, happens on both sides.
Let me read a couple more comments before we go. This is thoughts of a 20-something voter named Eliana. She describes why she's going to support Barack Obama. She wants to believe this nation can and will get better at dealing with itself in the world. She's tired of fighting, wants constructive conversations, not endless arguments. The heart of her argument, and I urge everyone to go to RadioInsideScoop.com and read it, is that, ironically, it is Obama that is a uniter, not a divider. It is Obama that can bring all of us together, have a safety net for the young, the sick, and the elderly. She's very strong.
You know what? Obama can probably bring the Democratic Party together. It'll be tough to see if he can bring the Clintonistas into the whole thing after it becomes apparent that he's going to ace Hillary out.
I think every supporter of Hillary Clinton will vote for Barack Obama in the fall.
More than 50% of this country does not want socialized medicine. They don't want a precipitous withdrawal from Iraq. They don't want increased spending on every little pet program.
You're wrong.
Obama is a divider, not a uniter.
You're wrong. America does want health care at cheaper levels.
We don't want socialized health care.
It works in Canada.
Doesn't work in Canada.
And that's all the time we have. Join us for more of the Inside Scoop. For information, just go to the website.